Listening to CJSF 90.1 in Burnaby, British Columbia.
Welcome to Guerrilla Radio, recorded November 19th, 2025. Well, more than 2 years into the current phase of Israel's erasure of Palestinian life, and there seems no stopping the genocide. But the worst of it is not our inability to stop the cruelty or arrest the criminality of the rogue state from Canada or the United States, or the many other places people march, boycott, and petition the conscience of their respective representatives. No, what's worse is the demonstrable fact our politicians, media figures, business and professional classes, military and police forces, and the courts are now and have from the beginning been actively aiding and abetting the slaughter. Yes, we're more than impotent in ending the horrors against Palestine. We are together complicit in its continuing. So, knowing that, what's to be done? Rabbi David Miviser has provided spiritual care and guidance in his native United States and adoptive Canadian home for more than 30 years, both within and beyond the synagogue. He says for most of that time he was a, quote, committed liberal or progressive Zionist. One of the ways he now opposes the premises of Zionism is providing direct support to families in besieged Gaza through the Connecting Gaza Project. David is too active with Independent Jewish Voices Canada and the American organization Jewish Voice for Peace, who say we envision a world where all people from the U.S. to Palestine live in freedom, justice, equality, and dignity. Rabbi David Miviser in the first half. And when it comes to fighting back against a rising sea of troubles, we little people gotta get smart, smarter than smart. Maybe it's time we talked about winning the fight for humanity with intelligence, artificial and otherwise. David Rovics is an itinerant musician and prolific songwriter. He's sat in, stood up, and faced down the powers that should not be on every issue of import you can imagine, on every continent save Antarctica, for longer than this benighted century. His mainly folk catalog is hundreds of songs long, and his devoted fan base hundreds of thousands deep, but now he risks it all coming out of the closet with iSuno, his all-too-real AI collaborator. David Rovics braving the slings and arrows for an alliance with the machines against the machine in the second half. But first, Rabbi David Miviser connecting with Gaza and remembering our battered, better selves. Welcome to the program, David.
Thank you so much.
Well, now, David, first, what is Connecting Gaza?
So Connecting Gaza is a group of people, meaning now almost 100 people, who are directly supporting families in Gaza. And we're supporting them partially materially by sending money, which they absolutely need, like every single day, to buy essentials like food and even medicine and now warm clothes. One of the people we're supporting just wrote to me like 2 hours ago that his tent caught fire, right? Mm-hmm. So we're supporting them with things like that. And then also, very important, is supporting them with just like relationship and witnessing them and, you know, like emotional support and, you know, that they know that somebody somewhere in the world like cares about them and is paying attention to them. And so we've been doing that pretty intensely for about 2 years. And of course, it's all very, it's like, it's remote, you know, like, so we do it through WhatsApp groups. Like each person in Gaza has a WhatsApp group. And in the WhatsApp group, there's maybe like 10 or 12 people who are there for them. And one of the advantages of doing it that way is it doesn't fall on any one of us to like totally support that person, because there's like another 10 people along with us and we do it together. And it's actually been like amazing to kind of enter into these people's lives and in a way like accompany them and be there to support them. And it's been pretty amazing. So that's like a introduction to it.
How has the connecting with Gaza been technologically, given the circumstance? I know that, and the app that you mentioned, WhatsApp, has been dumped by a lot of people because it has links to Israeli technology companies, and so is not trusted anymore, and is actually believed to have been used in targeting doctors and nurses and other people in bombing strikes in Gaza. But how? I mean, I'm just seeing that the weather's been really terrible. The living conditions are absolutely dire. They've had massive rainfall. People are getting washed away and stuff. What are you hearing from your people in Gaza?
Everything you just said. So first of all, we know WhatsApp is not secure and that anything we write is subjected to surveillance. So we just know that, you know, and everybody involved knows that. And the people there are so vulnerable in so many ways that, you know, adding that element to it, like, doesn't actually matter that much. You know, they're like, they've been literally like getting bombed and shot at and everything else. So we all know that, and we're all using kind of our best judgment about how to, you know, how to be connected. Anyway, that, I mean, we could talk more about that if you want, but that's just, I would say we're not unaware.
I was watching one of your videos just today, and you said something that really resonated with me in that video. You said, "My awareness of the Holocaust compels me to stand in solidarity with Palestinians facing a genocide." David, have we transcended genocide, do you think, at this point? Is this a Holocaust? Is this the 21st century Holocaust, in your view?
Well, I think we could say that, yes. You know, what you just quoted from me was testimony that I gave last week in a Canadian Senate hearing from the Canadian Senate Committee on Human Rights. So I just want to give that context to it. Like, that's a thing that I got to say to a group of Canadian senators looking into this. And to even be able to speak to them is a breakthrough, right? I'm with an organization called Independent Jewish Voices Canada, and we've asked over and over again to be able to speak into the space, specifically in the Canadian Senate, where they're paying attention to issues that they label as anti-Semitism. I think that's highly questionable. We've never been able to get into a hearing until last week. And I'm just saying that because I think it's a sign that the tide may be changing, things may be shifting in the political environment. Now, you asked me something else I haven't responded to, which is, what are we hearing from the people there? It's just horrible. You're aware of this. Probably most people listening are aware that, you know, there really is no ceasefire. The amount of aid that's getting in is absolutely inadequate. And what we're doing actually is on such a small scale. We are supporting about 30 families. Also, just even reflecting on my awareness of the Holocaust, like, I am very motivated to do this because I am so aware of people who were able to survive that genocide and that Holocaust because someone helped them. You know, there was an extermination campaign going on that killed millions of people. And there were people, I'll just say, some Germans, some Poles, some Lithuanians, some Czechs, you know, some Hungarians, some Russians, whatever, that they saw what was going on. And they put themselves out to help someone. You know, I just have an image in my mind of, I'll just make it up, like a Polish woman in her town, you know, knowing that there's like a ghetto and there's a wall. And when she walks by, when nobody's looking, just throw a loaf of bread over the wall. So the people trapped on the other side have a loaf of bread that they can eat that day. And I feel like what we're doing is about like that, that there are some people, we're helping them get some food so they can just survive like that day. I have no idea what's going to happen to them the day after. That's very motivating. I feel a complete like ancestral karmic obligation to do this. And that's the material side of it. And then on another side, I know from the education I got as a very young person that after the concentration camps were liberated, they found scrawled on the walls, like next to some of the barracks, you know, like, if only someone knew. That makes me think it's so important for people, so these people in Gaza, to know somebody out there in the world at least knows what's going on with them. I can't stop what Israel's doing, Israel and its supporters. I can't stop it. Every single day, I just told you, I testified in a committee of the Canadian Senate. Like, I've gone to so many protests. I've written so many letters. Push my MP, write op-eds in the newspaper, boycott, do everything I can possibly think of, along with literally millions of people around the world. I don't think we've stopped one bullet or one bomb. But we are helping these people as they struggle for their own survival. There's a book that just been published that we're doing a book launch for in Hamilton, and they're, you know, it's available. It's called Raising Palestine, spelled R-A-Z-I-N-G, you know, like tearing down. But the subtitle of the book is Punishing Solidarity and Dissent in Canada. And it's a collection of like 20 chapters or articles written by people who have been attacked and doxxed and lost their jobs and lost, you know, so much because of their solidarity and themselves being really attacked by Zionists who use state mechanisms and other kinds of influence to do that.
We've been supplying, in Canada's case, many of the bullets and other types of weaponry and components of the same that have made this genocide come Holocaust possible. Our politicians, as I wrote at the beginning, and the media figures in our business and professional classes, the military and the police and the courts are all active in aiding and abetting this slaughter. Making us wonder here in Canada, just what are the values that we're supposed to be defending? In your line as a rabbi, someone that is concerned with the law and concerned with the spiritual aspects of being human and humanness, what guidance or reassurance can you offer those in our audience who wonder if we are still human and humane?
Wow. Well, I think really that's up to each and every one of us to make our own determinations about ourselves and our own lives. Like, that's what we can do something about and to act on it, to not, you know, we can't help but being complicit because we are part of the society and part of the system. But each of us in our own ways can resist and push back and make a difference. And I think do not give up, right? Do not feel that you can't have an impact. Think out what can you do as yourself from your position, you know, that you're in life. So many different things that we all can do, every one of us. You know, I'd even say if anybody is wondering for themselves, what can they do? You know, they could actually contact me and I'd be happy to engage with them and help them figure that out. So as a rabbi and looking at it from a kind of human perspective, what can I say? Don't give up. Don't give in. Figure out for yourself what can you do and do your best at doing that. And it does add up and have an impact. It's like the only thing that will. Nothing will change unless we do that. And when we do that, things do change.
Well, if you've just tuned in, you're listening to Guerrilla Radio. I'm speaking today with Rabbi David Mivasar. David has provided spiritual care and guidance in his native United States, an adoptive Canadian home, for more than 30 years, both within and beyond the synagogue. He says, for the most part, he has been a committed liberal or progressive Zionist. And he says he now opposes the premises of Zionism, as well as one of his expressions of the support for the people in Palestine is the Connecting Gaza Project. I noticed, David, that the Connecting Gaza Project doesn't enjoy tax exemption status. Tax exemption has been a big issue here in Canada. Just this past week, the Herit Canada lost their tax exemption. They are the third Jewish fund, along with the Jewish National Fund and the Nieman Foundation, who have had their tax status revoked. Have you been following the reaction to this revocation or these revocations in the Jewish community here?
Oh, yes, I have. I've also been involved. I was one of the four complainants close to 8 years ago who submitted the complaint to the CRA about the Jewish National Fund that took them about 7 years to process it. And then they did revoke the Jewish National Fund's charitable status, which the Jewish National Fund had consistently abused and violated for decades. And it had been reported on for decades. And the CRA never did anything about it. So you asked about the reaction. And you know what? I'm going to just take a little excursus here. I think we should stop talking about the Jewish community. I think that's a misnomer. Mm-hmm. I don't think that exists. There is no thing that is the Jewish community. There are a lot of Jews. We're not community with each other. Right. So just I think it'd be better to use different language. So what you really mean is Zionists in Canada, some of whom are Jews, some of whom are not. So what I've seen since the CRA revoked Herut Canada's charitable status is a lot of people like MP Melissa Lantzman, you know, talking about this as if somehow there's a big anti-Jewish conspiracy. And now the government is like ganging up on the Jews and like taking away their charities. Poor Jews. You know, Jews need so much protection from this evil government. That's the kind of reaction that there is. When in fact, it took years for the CRA to deal with this properly and actually uphold their own regulations around charitable status, right? So you asked about the reaction. So the reaction among these Zionists is completely disingenuous, manipulative, you know, pretense, like that they're the victims here, when actually they've been abusing, you know, the charitable status for decades and decades.
When you say that you oppose the premises of Zionism, what are those premises?
Well, fundamentally, it's that, like, the Jewish people... Well, here's the language that's actually been adopted into Canadian law. The Jewish people deserve their national self-determination, which is like a concept that is created. I got to say this more clearly. Zionism says that the Jewish people have a right and deserve to have their own country in Palestine, I guess because of historical reasons that, of course, way back in ancient times, that's where our ancestors lived and came from, right? So that's what Zionism says, is that Jews have a right to have their own country there, despite the fact that that country was lived in by other people. And in order for the Jews to have our own country there, that we can take it away from them, dispossess them, destroy their homes, destroy their culture, drive them out, right? So I'm going to say some things you didn't ask me about. As a much younger person, I was very enamored with that idea. As a Jewish person growing up in the U.S., coming of age in the late 1960s, the idea that Jews could have our own country where we can live in our own culture, you know, speak our language. Like, why am I speaking English? I'm not an English person. I'm a Jewish person, right? Even the calendar that we use, you know, to say that, oh, now it's November. It's like, no, we have a Jewish calendar. Now it's Cheshvan, right? So many things like, oh, like we Jews should live in a Jewish country with a Jewish culture. That was so attractive to me and millions of other Jews. I really devoted myself to that. And when I describe myself as a liberal or progressive Zionist, I was always aware of how that disadvantaged and even oppressed Palestinians. And I always thought, oh, that's wrong. You know, we shouldn't do that. And earlier in my life, I wanted to like live the whole rest of my life in Israel, and I would be part of making Israel a more just society so that, you know, the Palestinian minority there would not be oppressed or disadvantaged. And that's really something I devoted myself to literally for decades of my life. And I'd say less than 10 years ago, seeing how things were going and also reading and learning more and being in relationship with more and more Palestinian people, I realized that the whole fundamental premise of the whole thing it's unacceptable, you know, that the whole thing would even happen. So I have to oppose it. You know, for some time I could have thought of myself as a non-Zionist, but after a while I had to get to the point of being an anti-Zionist and actively try to oppose it and peel people away from it and hopefully, God willing, you know, one day end it so that all the people who live there can live together in equality. They can have what I would call one democratic state for all the people who live there. Nobody has to get hurt by ending the Jewish supremacist state of Israel if people can just live together as human beings with equality among all of them. So that's the direction that I'm, you know, trying to go in these days. I think the direction we need to move in is to even talk about a society based on equality. Part of that equality is that Palestinians would, of course, be able to come back to their homeland, you know?
What does ending Zionism mean if it doesn't mean ceding power? It has to be, there's a power dynamic here, and one party has to cede power in order that the other can be elevated to equality. I mean, the situation we have now, of course, is obvious, but
that's right.
It's just so much gas that if that move isn't undertaken, and undertaken from the position of power. And we see like polls now show that vast majorities of Israelis are never going to go for that. And in fact, they support what's going on in Gaza. And huge number of them think that what's going on in Gaza isn't enough, that there should be more, you know?
Everything you're saying is right. You're right. I feel like I can't directly change that. But what I can do is speak out as a Jew and a person with my personal history of having lived there for years, being a rabbi, serving the Jewish people throughout my entire adulthood, and say that what has to really happen there is people living together in equality, you know, and put aside this entire nationalistic thing that we have going on, right? Like, yeah. I feel like that's what I can do. I can like hold that up as an ideal and express it and encourage more and more people to do that.
In British Columbia, we have a thing, and I know you lived in Vancouver for a long time, in the long environmental fight against the forestry industry, so-called, here in this province.
Yeah.
There's something called Talk and Log. Are you familiar with that? Where the logging company gets together with government and stakeholders in the environmental community that have been elevated to go inside the room to speak. And they talk and they talk and they talk and they log and they log and they log. Yeah. And it's called Talk and Log. The trees fall, but in this case in Palestine, it's trees, certainly. There's the olive groves get destroyed in the West Bank, and Gaza is flattened to parking lot status, as many asked it to be. And the talking just goes on. And the United Nations now, they just this last week, the Security Council agreed that, there'll be a force, an international force inserted into Gaza that will work to disarm Palestinian resistance as their prime directive, and then create something similar, it sounds, to what they created in the West Bank, a puppet police force that is tasked with keeping the people in line. But David, we're fast running out of time. And before we go, I want to read something that you wrote, which I thought was very interesting. And I watched you give a talk on this too. You say that, from the Jewish scriptures, the day is short. The task is great. The workers are slackers and lazy. The reward, though, is vast. And the master of the house is insistent and demanding. But remember, I'll add parenthetically, it is not your obligation to complete the task, and neither are you free to desist from it. And as when you say that the task is so great and you can't do it all, yes, none of us can. And sometimes I feel here too, like the hummingbird trying to put out the forest fire.
Yes.
But then what else can we do but carry those thimbles of water to the flame?
Yes. Yes. You know, the image of the hummingbird, I know that comes from Islam. And what you just quoted me, I was quoting Rabbi Tarfon from an ancient source of Judaism called Pirkei Avot. It's part of the Talmud. And I think those are very important lessons. And I would be just paralyzed if I didn't have that perspective. Like, how can I solve this problem? I can't. This goes back to the first thing I said. But I can do something. And if everybody does their something, it will add up. That's like the hope. That's all we can go on, you know. And some people can function on very, very high, powerful levels. Most people can just do something. So that's the main thing. Just do what we can. Like really think hard and think clearly, you know, and then take it on and do it. And do it with other people. I don't think any of us can do any, you know, accomplish much on our own. That's another thing, again, about connecting Gaza. There's a lot of us in there together, and we kind of support each other in doing it, and it makes a difference.
You can find Connecting Gaza at connectinggaza.substack.com and find out how you can get involved. Thanks a lot, Rabbi David Mivasar, for coming on and sharing with us today. Eh?
Thank you. Thank you so much.
After the break, I'll be joined by David Rovics. We're going to talk about his crossing over into dangerous territory with interesting results.
I remember hearing him years ago.
He's still going, and he's causing trouble.
He's an inspiration.
Yeah, indeed. And here's some of his music to take us through the transition. Thanks again, David.
Thank you.
When nothing is as it's presented.
It's a bit like discovering that your favorite uncle that's taken you for walks in the park, ever that he's really a serial abuser.
You need a different source. Guerrilla Radio, a century of news every Thursday and Saturday.
Gonna have free daycare for all the kids, freeze the rents and start the bids for contracts to build actually affordable housing by the transit in the middle of the metropolis, where from now on the transit is free. First we take New York City. First we take New York City. We're gonna tax the rich and make them pay so the rest of us can manage to stay in the place where for so long for so many was the home for those who didn't have any. And then 90,000 people volunteered for Mamdani. First we take New York City.
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 People hit the streets and showed everybody how organized people can stand up now. Working together we can change the course. Cut the crap and go right to the source. Focus on the things that matter so much to the many. First we take New York City.
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 And welcome back to Guerrilla Radio. Well, when it comes to fighting back against a rising sea of troubles, we little people got to get smart, smarter than smart. Maybe it's time we talked about winning the fight for humanity with intelligence. artificial and otherwise. David Rovix is an itinerant musician and prolific songwriter. He's sat in, stood up, and faced down the powers that should not be on every issue of import you can imagine on every continent, save Antarctica, for longer